October meeting, Wednesday, October 28, 2020. Would everyone please stand for the flag, sir? I
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Will the clerk call the roll?
Vice President Nix.
Here.
President Bergman.
Here.
Commissioner Nicholson. Commissioner Baltadonna.
Here.
Commissioner O.
All right, thank you. That'll take us to a public comment period for today's meeting. Members of the public wishing to address the Civil Service Commission on matters covered in the schedule below may do so when recognized by the president. Presentations are limited to 3 minutes per individual. Is there anyone wishing to address the commission at this time on the public comment period? All right, seeing none, we're going to move on. We're going to consider the minutes from three meetings. And so I'm going to take July 13th and 14th together, and we'll separate for the IOC August 26th. So are there any corrections or amendments to the July 13th and 14th meetings?
President Bergman?
Yes.
I was not present at these meetings, so I can't vote on them.
We're going to need another commissioner.
Exactly, because
yeah, so we have a forum for that. Okay, so if I wasn't present for the other one, so we have to wait for all of it. So. Right. The next is item number four, request to reschedule November 18th, 2020 Civil Service Commission regular meeting, Thursday, November 19th, 2020. Would somebody like to speak to that, please? Is there a reason that we're doing this? What's happening?
I'm sorry, I missed this one.
Okay, so the reason why we're requesting the 19th and the 20th is so we could have a special hearing on the 19th and the 20th.
Okay.
An email went out, and that was the consensus, I think, based on availability.
President Bergman, we have one of the closed session items will be addressing the notice of that, so the parties are all aware of that and committed to those two dates as well. Doug Smith is counsel, outside counsel, and then the appellant. So if we may at all keep those dates, we need to, because we're about to send a notice and the parties are committed.
All right, so we're not going to be here on the 18th, is that correct?
I think that's correct. That's my understanding.
So
is that right, Rosie?
It is the 19th. All right. So we don't need to take any action on that. It's just, that's just the information.
I don't think so. We don't need to.
No formal action required.
All right, so now we have another commissioner. Mr. Nicholson, are you able to participate in the minutes?
No, yes, ma'am.
Okay. So we're going to consider the meetings July 13th and 14th. Is there a motion to approve as written?
I move approval as written. I move approval as written.
Right, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No, motion carries. We have one abstention and one absentee. Okay, the next one I was not present for, so I'm going to ask if there are any amendments or corrections to the August 26, 2020 meeting. If there are none, is there a motion for approval?
I move to approve.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
All right. Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And motion carries. No abstention for me. Number four, so we're going to go to number five. Request to approve the CSC regular meeting schedule for 2021.
I move approval of the 2021 schedule of meetings.
All right. No comments. Is there a second for the motion?
I'll second.
Okay. Moving second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No, motion carries. Thank you. All right. The annual report to receive and file. Are there any comments, or did anyone from your side want to go through it?
We are happy to go through it if you'd like us to, and we can make a few comments when he is here to answer any questions. So we can. I, in the past, your commission has asked us just to receive and file and take questions, so we can, yeah, do either one.
Would anyone like to have any discussion with the commission on this particular item?
I think that the, this is a lot of work to put together, and I read through it, and I was very impressed with all the work that goes on there. I think that it's appropriate for us to offer human resources an opportunity to say, is there any highlight or anything that they found particularly worthy of us making note of?
Sure. Wendy, do you want to say a few words, or can I get to it?
Hi, this is Wendy Lynch, Human Resources Analyst. A few things we want to bring up in this report is that in March this year, obviously, there was a huge change in how the county kind of took a lot of actions for recruitment, for grievances, for appeals, for our response to a lot of these things. One of the biggest things we do want to point out is despite our number of recruitments dropping by 18% in total, down 10% for open recruitment, our number of total hires only decreased by 2%. So we're still pretty on par in terms of recruitment, or in terms of hires from year over year. The second item we do want to point out is for equal employment opportunity, and this is page 6.012 and 6.013. The census for 2020 results will be coming out soon, so that we'll see an update on that in next year's annual report. But for this year, it has remained the same, and we are happy to report there's a slight increase in diversity, and we're hoping to keep in along that track. But that is the majority and the main items we would like to bring to attention. Becky, do you mind just for a second?
Of course.
Yeah. Does that need to be repeated?
I couldn't hear a word she said.
Okay. Sorry. So previous year there was quite a bit of changes in how we did things in response to the pandemic. The two items we do want to point out is one, even though the number of total recruitments have decreased, the number of total hires have remained pretty consistent year over year. So there was about 18% decrease in recruitments, but there's only about 2% decrease in actual hires. The second item is that there was a census completed this year. However, we don't have the final results yet. So we will see those numbers updated for next year. And we're happy to kind of report that we are still seeing a slight increase in diversity, and we're hoping to continue down that path.
I just want to comment on page 11 and 14. You know, there's a lot of closeness between the 3 years. I mean, it doesn't deviate that much, which is, you know, I mean, looks like a pretty decent average going on. So,
yeah.
When you're consistent like that, I think it means you're doing things really right.
Yes, you know, we expected the number of hires to decrease because we had a hiring freeze, and of course, because of the pandemic, we expected a slowing, and when that didn't happen, we took note, and we certainly are giving kudos to the HR team for during the pandemic keeping up with all this. The other kind of notable activity is we don't report it typically in here, but our turnover. So pre-pandemic had really gone up. We used to average about 7%, and then it went up to about 13%. And not attributable to retirements. Retirements have been flat, so we have about 100 people retire a year, give or take. But the number of employees in their second and third year are exiting at a higher rate, especially our younger employees, than we've seen in the past. And so with that increase in turnover, that's putting pressure on our hiring. And so I think We're doing a good job countywide of selecting more than one person off an eligible list, and that's why we don't have to run as many recruitments. But we have to keep replacing people because our turnover has increased. And so I thought you might be interested in that.
What's the total of the workforce right now?
About 2,800.
You know, how many people are actually working from home?
Yeah, we keep track of that, not perfectly, because most employees are working a hybrid telecommuting model. So, but the last number I saw was at least 1,500 are doing some level of telecommuting, not 100%. But employees, departments have brought employees back and are having people work, you know, whatever makes sense for their particular department. So like in human resources, we have a rotating schedule. So there's always about a third of employees in the office, and then we rotate around so that we can still see each other periodically, and but still have telecommuting.
Is work productivity, is it all good still? Is it consistent?
It is. I think that we, you know, every department is addressing their own type of work and the challenges, but I can absolutely speak for human resources. In some of our divisions, we've actually seen an increase in productivity. So if you think about our, you know, we have a lot of knowledge workers, and then our technicians that do all of the processing of employees coming on and, you know, any transactional work, they were finding that their productivity increased because they're not getting interruptions, and because there's so much, you know, computer activity, if they can sit at home and just get it done, they were fine. They're really pleased with it. So we're going to keep telecommuting and human resources probably in a similar way that we're doing it now for quite some time. It's working well. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, for me, I'm self-employed. It's so easy to get sidetracked in your home versus sitting and focusing. So, I always feel like I can accomplish a lot more if I'm sitting in an office environment versus home.
Yeah, I understand. I have to go in periodically. I mean, more than periodically. Like, yeah. I work at home like once a week, and then I start getting antsy. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, question. You referenced sort of the high rate of turnover, and that you saw an uptick. It was kind of stable around 7% and then went up to 13%. You kind of attributed it to younger workforce. Is there a sort of a systemized exit interview process, and that you've been able to collect data to really follow exactly why? I mean, that's a pretty significant increase, and I'd be curious, you know, if we're taking any steps to drill down a little bit on.
Yeah, absolutely. In a couple ways, we do have an exit interview process, and it's set up hopefully to encourage people to do it because they can do it online, or they can do it in person in their department or in HR. We still don't get as many as we'd like, but we also have an employee engagement survey that gives us some information about, you know, what's working, what's not working. But we're definitely seeing something different. You know, the current workforce is more mobile. And but one thing that in HR we noticed is that if we follow up, like at the point where people are finishing their probationary period, and then making sure we're engaging them, not just us, but with the department, mm-hmm. engaging them, you know, more frequently, like reaching out and making, you know, how are you doing, what are you doing? We think that's really important, because if you're losing people 3 years in, there is something going on.
Absolutely, you know? And there's a loss of resources there too, because it takes a lot to get.
Very expensive. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So, is there not an automatic performance evaluation that takes place after the probationary period?
There absolutely is.
Okay, so that's the good check-in point. And then, is there not a way to require or to make the exit interview process just sort of protocol, you know, your that final meeting that you have, and you collect the keys, but you gotta, you know, you do this interview.
Yeah, in fact, we put it into, we're automating it so that when people, you know, we have automated onboarding, and then the automated offboarding, you know, took secondary place in automation, but we're hoping that that helps too. Like if you're filling out anything final and you're already there, then it'll help, you know, help people respond. The other thing is, I just lost my train of thought.
As an employer, I wouldn't want to lose someone without knowing for certain why I'm losing them. And,
right.
You know, and so I would work that into the, you know, you don't get your final cover documents until you complete this process kind of thing.
Sure. Possible. And I think people too, they don't want to burn bridges, and so, you know, we often don't get a super meaty answer, and so that's a challenge. But yeah, good point. Thank
you. It's confidential and what have you. Yeah, I understand that. But I think it's worth it to sort of figure out why that's happening. Because 3 years in, if you're seeing a pattern, that's problematic.
Yeah.
Agreed. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thanks, Wendy.
All right, so is there a motion to receive the file of annual report of fiscal years?
I move that we receive the file and thank HR for doing that for this job and putting it together.
I agree. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you. Request to approve a new job specification and be public information specialist.
Here. I will. Good morning, commissioners.
Do you want to remove your mask so we can understand you?
Good morning, commissioners. Teresa McCarthy White, HR analyst in the Labor Division. Before you today is a new classification specification recommendation for public information specialist 1, 2, 3. The purpose of this class is to perform professional level communications, crisis management, and media relations duties, advise and assist county management with public information activities, and manage county information sources, including websites and social media. We currently have incumbents whose primary responsibility is to serve as a spokesperson for or coordinate communications on behalf of their department, program, or the county as a whole, classified in a variety of different classifications. We need an entry-level class, journey, and advanced journey level to accommodate the various levels at which the incumbents are currently working at, as well as to create some flexibility for the future. The three levels are distinguished by the level of discretion in the assignment size, scope, and impact, as well as the incumbent's minimum qualifications. As mentioned in my memo, this classification is distinguished from public information officer classifications found in other public agencies. So should the need for that role ever arise in our county, we would create a separate classification for that. The addition of the proposed public information specialist series will aid in attracting the best qualified candidates by accurately portraying the classification duties and requirements to potential applicants and current employees. Will also be used as a basis for classification, compensation, and performance management. The proposed spec is in your packet, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Teresa, I'd like to add that our assistant county administrator, Guy Savage, is joining us via Zoom. And thank you, Guy, for joining us on the big screen.
Did you have any comments to add?
Yeah, if I could, that'd be terrific. Thank you, President Bergman, and the rest of the commission. I guess I would just say again, my name for the record, Guy Savage, and he's the county administrative officer here at the county. I'm very supportive of the specification as it's written. The level of responsibility and autonomy that's described, I think, is appropriate for the classes of folks that I've seen performing this role in various levels within different departments. I know that for us here locally, I've had an administrative analyst who's performed this role for the better part of 5 years now. And that clearly is not the right specification for someone performing these specific and unique duties. So So with that, I would just say thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions if there are any for me. Thank you again.
Very good, thank you. All right, commissioners, do you want to make any comments, Ms. Dix?
I just want to be clear, this would be a reclassification for people who are already doing the work that's described in this specification?
Correct. We have a few individuals already that are in a different variety of classifications that would be reclassed to this. And as like I mentioned, it also creates some flexibility for the future should we ever onboard anybody in the lower levels.
So the people that are already in the what will become this classification, you would put them in as a 1, 2, or a 3 depending on what their qualifications are?
Correct. For example, the administrative analyst that Mr. Savage mentioned, she coordinates the countywide communications on behalf of the board and the CAO's office, so she would be placed in the level 3 classification.
Okay. And is this change because of the increased visibility and increased need for public information?
So actually, no, this need was already on our radar before the pandemic. Actually, it's been on our list to address for about over a year now. But yes, the pandemic did highlight it some more.
And then the people that are in these positions or that are hired, they will have, they'll be, for instance, if they go into a particular department, they will have a specific supervisor who monitors and evaluates their work?
Correct. That supervisor may not have, their role may not be communications oriented, but yes, they would have a supervisor.
I'm moving on now to 7A, 3, and it's under distinguishing characteristics last sentence, and
you know what, let's pause for just a moment. We have two sets of documents. We have a new one later that we came in, and we have the ones that were in our packet. So would somebody please explain the differences to those so we can get on the same page?
Yeah, so yes, we did send in a memo and the spec last Wednesday, and then we had some edits to just the distinguishing characteristics for the Public Information Specialist 3 that we added in and submitted to you in this packet. So those, the red line version is on 7A006 for the distinguishing characteristics, and then the accepted changes are on
7A.015. So now that's going to be really confusing. So
well,
let's go off the one that we have in the packet.
Packet.
I think
but we'll follow along, yeah.
Okay, so back to distinguishing characteristics, the last sentence in that paragraph, and this is really just a question because I'm not understanding the term of art that you're using. It says assigned to a division within a department or community-facing program. Could you give me an example of what a community-facing program is?
Yeah, absolutely. So for example, the health agency has a number of various different programs that are community facing. For example, they have a program called Friday Night Lights that engages youth and you know teach them different skills, etc. So that would be an example of a community facing program.
Okay. And is this something that is primarily in the health department or are there other departments that also use that term of art?
So I'm not sure what other departments use that community-facing program, that exact term, no, but we expect that once we, now that we've created this specification and once it is approved, that we'll have incumbents in different departments approaching us to assess whether or not they properly fit into this specification, so we just wanted to leave that open should that need arise or if it's currently out there.
Okay. Moving on the same page, down under, it's public information specialist 2, and on my page, it's starts in the I'll just read out the part that I put parentheses around. It is distinguished from public information specialist 3 by the latter's high degree of independence, etc. And the reason that I am asking about this is it seems I'm questioning whether that's necessary in this at this particular point, because usually we see what the characteristics of a 1 and a 2 and a 3 are, and those are self-distinguishing. And so calling out that how 2 is different than 3 was a little awkward for me, because then I'm looking over to see, well, where is it in 3 and so on. So my suggestion would be is that we don't need that in 2, and that sentence, I think it's one or two sentences, could just be removed, and then you flow from 1, 2, and 3. And if something is important in here, and I believe everything in there is already covered in the 3 section.
Yeah, so I can move that sentence into the three distinguishing characteristics if there's anything that I feel like is not properly addressed there, so that it's not in the 2 and the 3 distinguishing characteristics says this is distinguished from the 2 in that.
I believe the 3 already does it in that exact same language. And excuse me, I didn't try to rewrite it for you. I just noticed it felt awkward. And then I'm moving on to page 7A4.
So let's stop for a moment. Are you going to make that change? Has that ability change? We can vote on that in a few minutes.
Yes, sir. She deletes that sentence because the second sentence of public information specialist 3 is this classification is distinguished from GIS 2 in that. So it talks about what you're saying.
I agree. I just want to make sure we have consensus to move forward. All right.
I'm a little confused. You're using the document that was sent home, that was
yes.
emailed to us?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what page are you on now?
7A3.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on which one we're looking at.
I've made all my notes on when that they
Oh, you know why? Because I actually printed out the correct ones. They also do have the correct ones. So I'm only using the correct versions. Okay, that explains it. Sorry, thank you.
Okay, so then we've agreed then to take that one sentence out. I'm moving on now to 7A4, and this is under public information specialist 3, this second line from the end of that paragraph, and it says PSI 3 is reserved for administrative office or a large and highly visible department. I just was curious for examples on what those other departments are that have that need.
So that last sentence was actually removed in the updated version of the spec, and so that 3 level is now just reserved for the incumbent who advises the chief administrative officer and board of supervisors. So there are no other departments that would be eligible.
Okay, what page are you looking at on your newer document?
7A006.
Putting in the combination of experience and training and so on. that a candidate could substitute experience as a public information specialist on a year-by-year basis for the college education. In other words, make it clear that someone may have an AA degree in, and that they've been out in a private industry working in PIO and so on, that they could still qualify to become a one.
So the purpose of the flexible language is to show what it typically includes, but any variation can be accepted, and with that language.
I'm asking for that variation.
So I will specify that variation.
That variation means it's so vague, it just leaves you open to do whatever you want. I just like things pinned down a little tighter.
Well, but it, for my purposes, accepting the vague language at the first sentence, which we all have debated before, but to also clarify to a candidate that candidates with experience, but maybe not the four-year degree, could still be considered.
Yeah, so I will add the statement that experience can be substituted by education can be substituted by experience on a year-for-year basis.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to what? You're going to put it in there writing, or are you going to what?
I'm going to add that in that statement into that section.
And you'll want me to know those were my questions. So,
are you have you concluded?
I've concluded my list of questions.
Very good. Commissioner Nicholson.
Thank you. I just want to go back to the sentence that was deleted from Public Information Specialist 3. So when the incumbent retires, is the county's intent only to have someone at one specialist three, and that specialist three is only going to be advising the CAO and the Board of Supervisors?
At this time, there is the need for only the one, but as I mentioned in my memo, you know, we do not have a separate public information officer specification, so should that need arise, or if the communication needs ever develop in the county, then we can take a closer look at it. But yes, at this time, there's just the need for the one in the administrative office.
So you're going to come back to us when that person retires and you need something different, or if there's going to be someone like a PIO for a different county department?
So they could other county departments, or incumbents in other county departments would operate at that two level. We just felt like we needed to distinguish the three in that the communications coming out of the departments are not as sensitive, highly political, and they don't have to speak on behalf of an elected board and, you know, coordinate opinions. So we just felt like it wasn't the same level as somebody communicating on behalf of a single department head.
And how many incumbents are going to become public information specialists too?
At this time, we are aware of one, possibly two, current county employees that would fit in that one for the health agency, is an example.
Is it going to be like a recruitment for that?
So there's currently an incumbent at the health agency that's working at the two level that would just be reclassified into that position.
Would you be hiring any ones, or are there in other departments some who are ones?
At this point in time, we are not aware of anybody that is operating at the one level, but like I mentioned earlier, once this spec is approved by your commission, we do expect to hear from some other departments that are, you know, have somebody operating at that level and have us assess whether or not that'd be appropriate classification for them.
Jen, may I jump in and ask another question? Thank you. You mentioned PIO. This position in the administrative office at the level three, I'm envisioning that based on the descriptions here and the sensitive nature of that at some point the county might choose to have a PIO. So that brings me back to Jen's point, is should we really delete that part, because you might then have threes in other departments if they're, I know you all thought through this, but it brought it to my attention when you keep mentioning a PIO, that at some point that level of expertise might be required in the admin office. I could also see it in the sheriff's office or something like that.
So the traditional PIO or the PIO that we see in other agencies that we surveyed in our comparable universe, they did other type of like legislative work and, you know, advocating for legislation, et cetera, and we don't see this incumbent taking on that role anytime. If that need ever developed in our county, then that person could potentially end up supervising the third, the level three in the administrative office. But we at this time don't see that person becoming a PIO in that way.
PIO is often people in private industry often are called PIO when they're doing these duties that you described here.
That is correct, but just on the public agencies, there is that distinction.
Okay.
So, anytime. So, the sheriff has a spokesperson, right? This talks to TV and the press. What is that person going to end up in this public information specialist category, or is that?
So at this time, I don't believe he will be. He is currently in a different classification. However, he has a unique role in that he is called out at all hours of the night and day. So that does differ from the other roles in these, basically these classifications will be placed in bargaining 07, so they will become, you know, exempt to overtime and situations like that. However, because he has that specialized, you know, call back feature in his role at this time, we are not looking to reclass him until we can find an appropriate classification that can, you know, accommodate his time.
And so normally my experience is they, when we're looking at a career series, twos are supervising ones, threes are supervising twos, but these people are going to be spread throughout the county.
That is correct.
We have a computer malfunction, and I think they haven't worked out, so we will resume where we were before.
I lost my train of thought. My recollection is that I was asking about how those are going to work, because you have different PIS ones in different departments, so there's not necessarily a PIS two in that same department to supervise. So how does that work?
So, for example, right now, like we mentioned, there are no current incumbents in the public information specialist one, so they could very much well be supervised by a two or a three. So, for example, if the administrative office ever needed a support person, they could easily slide into that one classification. There is the ability to promote from a one to a two, or potentially have twos in our smaller departments or other departments promote into that three classification for the administrative office if that position ever becomes vacant. And so, for example, in our health agency, we have a public information specialist too, so somebody working at that level who is supervised by a program manager. So the program manager's role is kind of diversified, and communications is one piece of her job, so we didn't feel like it was appropriate for her to be put into a classification that was completely oriented with communications. So we, that's an example of where you could have somebody supervised by a non-communications person.
That explanation, I'm not quite sure. I understand what you're saying, but it seems sort of hard for somebody who's not, I guess, I'm not quite sure why we're breaking this down, if that's the way it's going to go, but that's...
Well, I think that leads to the question, if there's a one working in the health agency, who's going to supervise that person?
So it could potentially be the two level that's in the health agency.
Well, if there wasn't a two there, what if the two was over probation and the one is in the health agency? You know, if this department, I mean, if it could be over many different departments having these people, who would there be their immediate supervising them?
So that basically the role kind of is distinguished in addition to just, you know, there's the size of the department, the complexity of the department. The public information specialist is going to work on, you know, lower scope items and simpler items that don't necessarily need to be reviewed by a communications professional. It could be flyers, it could be communications material. So really, you know, it's a department that's not going to have a whole bunch of media and public relations types of activities.
Well, you know, in my estimation, if somebody's like a trainee or a, you know, a one, they're going to need supervision of some sort. If you don't have a one and a two or a three all in the same department, they're spread out over multiple departments, who would be that immediate supervisor to keep tabs and make sure things are being done right?
So if you don't mind, I can pipe in a little bit. It's a kind of a similar setup to some other classifications in the county. So if you think about information technology, we've got IT professionals in a variety of departments. The centralized IT director may or may not supervise some of those people. So some of the IT people in DSS ultimately are supervised by a non-IT professional. And so what we do to make sure that, let me back up. So that makes sense in our model because they're serving technology that is specific to social services department, and it's really helpful for experts in social services to have oversight. However, you don't want them to lose their connection to technology generally, and you want them to have, you know, colleagues that are also technology experts. So we do cross communities of interest frequently. So let's say you've got IT people who are all working on, I don't have a very good example off the top of my head. Let's say mainframe, which is going away, but that's what popped into my mind. You're going to have a community of interest that they get together periodically and talk. We envision public information specialists to be very similar because the administrative office is leading in terms of how we want to communicate in, what do we put in words? What do we put in graphs? What is our key goal here? But we don't need to have it all centralized in the administrative office if the public information specialist in the health agency, 80% of the time is really focused on health agency issues. So they're still gonna get together and talk. It's just we're not centralizing. And I don't know, if Guy, if you would add anything to that.
If the president doesn't mind, I'd love to. Yes, in fact, that happens today. The admin analyst here, who serves as a three essentially in the administrative office, pulls all the folks that have some role, for instance, with social media or in communicating their project ideas together on a regular basis. Prior to COVID-19, it was happening on a monthly basis so that they could share best practices and understand how best to communicate with the public. So a lot of that is happening kind of behind the scenes. I think, I wouldn't, as the old IT director, I wouldn't say the mainframe. There are lots of things in the
IT. Yeah, that was a bad example, mainframe. I admitted that.
I got rid of that thing. I think IT security is a very good example. We have IT technology professionals who deal with IT security issues, but we also have administrative services officers who occasionally have to support IT security for somebody's email or what have you. So that is a really, in my mind, as the old IT professional, analogous situation where you have non-IT people who end up supervising these IT specialists and in some cases performing the role very part-time.
So on level one, who's going to write their LP evaluation? Who's going to do that?
So whoever their supervisor is, and if they...
Supervisor of the department or...?
Yeah, their direct supervisor would absolutely... That's always their role, is to write evaluations. And in our county, we get input from stakeholders on evaluations. It's our protocol. Absolutely.
So the supervisor in health agency, if you added one working in health agency, that supervisor would be somebody who wouldn't know a lot about being a public information officer when they wrote the evaluation. Is that correct?
So for example, in the health agency is a great example. So a lot of the work that she produces is stuff like informational flyers on the Valley fever. That's not something that another communications person is going to be able to evaluate the effectiveness of that communication. That needs to be reviewed by a medical professional. So that's an example of where she has the expertise on how to communicate, but the subject matter and she's being supervised by somebody with the subject matter expertise.
Is that kind of the line you were
right? Yeah. So exactly how many people are we talking about? Three plus one.
So at this moment in time, we are aware of two individuals that we know. One would slide, the administrative analyst would slide into the 3-level, and the health agency incumbent would slide into the 2-level. We are aware of a few other people out in the agency that do these types of duties. We are not quite sure if it's full-time, part-time, et cetera, so we will be approaching them and doing a classification study to see what the most appropriate classification would be for them, either one of these levels or in the classification they're currently operating, if it's a, you know, 25% of their time is spent on communications and the other 75% of the time they're doing something completely different that's not represented by this specification.
So, explaining why we're creating a new career series for 2 people.
Well, and to, for example, we know that we have the 3-person in the administrative office. We know that the person in the health agency is operating at the 2. The 1 is really to create some flexibility for the future because we do foresee that communication needs are going to continue to grow. Then, like I mentioned, the administrative analyst in, may at some point need a support analyst considering the how much workload she has. In addition to her duties for the Board of Supervisors and the CAO, she does kind of, like Guy mentioned, collaborate with all the other communication specialists in the county. She helps review them. She trains other department heads outside of her department on how to do media, press conferences, et cetera. So her role is continuously growing, and she may eventually need somebody that can support her on the lower level work.
Number of employees currently impacted. I had questions about supervision because that was unclear to me. It's a little bit clearer to me, and I was also trying to find an analogous situation within the county. I thought of one, and now I can't remember what it was, but I guess IT is another good one. I just really like employees to have real clarity on who their supervisor is, and so I think that wonder if that can get a little bit lost if they're classified one way but they're being supervised another way. So I think that really needs to be clear because they may in fact be reporting to their direct supervisor within their department but also have some sort of reporting responsibilities to the level 3.
So there wouldn't be any formal reporting responsibilities. So for example, when we create communications that need to go out either to the public or to county employees, we take our communications and we send it off to the individual in the admin office to kind of review it for county consistency and that type of stuff, but it's not a formal supervisory relationship.
Okay, but what if there is some, I read somewhere that the level 3 would be responsible for sort of overall department coordination. I don't remember which bullet point that was, but I saw something to that effect. So, you know, if then you have a level 1 or 2 that kind of goes rogue and doesn't necessarily follow that overarching plan that the level 3.
So I think the example you may be referring to is in, we did mention that in an emergency, the level 3 would supervise the 1s and the 2s to coordinate, for example, during this pandemic, she has been supervising that team and coordinating all their activities, but outside of there is not that formal relationship. It's more like a professional working group at this point.
Okay,
and she.
So,
yeah.
So again, is there confusion then for who that level 1 or 2 reports to, pandemic or no pandemic, and who's going to be evaluating them? I just think it's important for employees, it's only fair for them to know what their responsibilities are and who they report to if and then who's evaluating them. And so I think there's a little bit of
would you please identify yourself?
My name is Mark Seltman. I'm a principal HR analyst overseeing compensation classification, safety, and workers' compensation, and I would just it's designed to have some flexibility for different department needs. I don't expect a situation where you're going to have one operating in a department by themselves. More typically, it would probably be a situation where Teresa described a 1 and a 3 operating in a bigger department, where you have a 2 in health agency. That's a department that's determined that they have a significant need for planning, organizing, and executing communication, but it's really, that's the determination that there was a need really came from the department management, and they wanted to, they've established a role. In this particular situation, they're classified as an ASO, an administrative services officer. We want to properly classify them. But we think it's, and in this case, there is a formal relationship between the, in this case, the program manager, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
But in other departments, it might be an ASM if they didn't have a, they don't have a communications manager, that job doesn't exist. And they're not going to have a three unless they're in the admin office. So they will be reporting to a typically it's going to be administrative services manager or a program manager who has the responsibility of that ultimate data of that communication. So there's a, there is, I just want to make sure there is a clear formal reporting. They know who their boss is, what their marching orders are, what they're accountable for, who's going to do their discipline, their performance review, etc.
Okay, and that's important.
But that's just for the two people that exist. I mean, our issue is, my issue is, why are we creating this for two people? And you say that there may be other people, but you haven't determined whether they fall in it. And it seems like, especially at the one level, it's not going to be a full-time job unless you're helping a three.
So our county offers a variety of different programs. For example, you know, Public Works has energy programs, and they may need somebody that operates at a lower level doing just sort of flyers and, you know, communication materials where they're still, like I mentioned, still going to be the subject matter expert, but they need somebody that is more, you know, oriented and educated around how to properly communicate that. And it may not be a large scope. You know, energy is very important, obviously, but that impact to, you know, the public is not as important as, say, something that's coming out of the Board of Supervisors office. So that would be the type of person that could operate at that one level.
Well,
just, I'd just like to add to it. I mean, as we, it's true that we could operate this, we could operate as the county stands now with two levels, I think, appropriately without a, that entry level. In the, in part, for efficiency's sake, in the event, say, that the administrative office, they decide that the communication program needs another body, they don't want it to be a three, and they want to have the flexibility, they might have internal incumbents who are qualified to do the one but not the two. So it gives you the ability to recruit internally without being forced to exclude people that might be qualified internally, or potentially overpay them because the only class you have is at a pay range that's higher. It just gives you an ability, more flexibility in how you structure the department. That's really how, why we're going out in advance of a need for one and putting it in the series.
I understand that. I don't have a problem with that. And it's also just consistent with all of your, most of your other classifications. So that's fine. I just really want to make sure that there's clarity on the supervision, because I'm hearing that an individual would be clear on who's supervising, who they need to, who they report to, and who evaluates them. But I'm also hearing that this level three in another department might be also issuing some countywide recommendations and stuff. So that's where I have some concern and some clarity there. So, and then my other sort of issue or question was, there was a reference to the sheriff's office having a spokesperson, but that is distinguished somehow because they have to be available at all hours of the day and night. But that is a condition of employment in this specification.
Yeah, just the frequency.
For any communications person, yeah. I think that applies across the department.
Generally, yes, but the frequency, you know, with public safety information is a lot more than it is anywhere else in the other departments. And so we just wanted to, you know, be flexible for that department considering how frequently he is called during off hours. That could be 2 a.m., 3 a.m. on a nightly basis depending on what's going on. And that would not be the case for any of the other departments.
But that's not, that doesn't explain to me why that employee is outside of this.
So he's currently represented in a bar union and a union that is, so he is eligible for overtime. This is a professional career series that would be exempt from overtime. So that's the distinguishing.
Can we sheriff's office head of GIO for probably 30 years that I'm aware of. But it's always, they've always had one. So this is something that's different than that.
Well, there's more than one. If that's not the only department that needs this type of goal, and that's becoming increasingly clear given the multimedia sort of society that we're in.
I'd like to go back to the supervision issue. I know. The more we talk about it, the more we think about it. I'm just curious, and maybe this is Mr. Savage's point. I remember in my past life, I worked a lot with emergency services, and they had a PIO because we did exercises for the different kinds of disasters that could happen. Is the person who does that for emergency services at the admin office, is that the same person you're talking about who would be the PIS 3 that you're talking about, or does emergency services have their own public information specialist?
Yeah, thank you for the question. Again, Guy Savage for the record there. So all of our emergency services coordinators, our ESCs, who typically are our responders from the Office of Emergency Services, have some level of training for the PIO kind of a role, meaning speaking during an emergency. They don't typically deal with strategy for other departments or speaking on behalf of the board. Instead, it's more, much like we'll see with, for instance, fire. Many firefighters will be assigned the PIO role for a specific incident, you know, a fire that's breaking out. So all of our ESCs have that training, but that it's very much a subset of their job as opposed to their primary role. The person who we have doing this role today, it's her full-time role. She does nothing else. She doesn't work on programs. She works on communications. She helps write strategies for other departments. She works with folks who do this role part-time. So that really is the difference to me. So again, all of our emergency services coordinators do have that training, but they would just be short-term, that sort of thing.
In the exercises that I remember when all of us would do the tabletops or actually demonstrating the response, part of the public information was there was a place where they would set up, like they do during fires and so on, to have the media be informed. Now, is it that the individual, I know fire and Cal Fire and those usually have their own people, but as I recall, the county also had somebody from emergency services, and if it's a big disaster, is your PIO person, your person who's the 3, would they be then taking over that role of monitoring the media and the output to the public based on the emergency, or would it still be your emergency services people who would then also have a number of other responsibilities as far as the operation for response to the disaster?
So I think Teresa put this best, that much of that public role in front of the camera is often done by PIO as opposed to what we're describing here. Even with today's incident with COVID-19, for instance, I realize this is kind of pulling back the veil and showing you what's behind the scenes there. Many of the messages you hear from Dr. Bornstein or the coordination of our weekly press releases out of the Emergency Operations Center that go live on TV and Facebook and other things, many of those messages, all of that coordination, the strategy behind the messaging, already looking forward to what we're going to do in Thanksgiving and Christmas, and all of that stuff is handled actually by the person we're talking about. So she may not be in front of the camera, but she is behind the camera, and all those messages that go out via Facebook and social media and everything else, making sure the strategy is consistent and so on.
Excuse me, who's the person you're talking about, the one that you want to make a 3?
Yes.
Correct.
So the person in front of the camera may vary dependent on the emergency. So in this emergency, we're using health agency professionals. In a public safety emergency, it may be somebody from the sheriff's department, including the sheriff. So that the person in front of the camera kind of varies depending on the emergency, but it's always coordinated by the administrative analyst in the background.
And Well, and part of the reason that I'm dwelling down on this is that I'm picturing from what you're telling us that potentially right now we're talking about two people, but it sounds like this could mushroom into having, you know, half a dozen or more employees. And so, like right now you're saying it's for two, but you're going to do an evaluation desk audit or whatever. I'm just concerned that we don't really know what this is actually going to become. You know, we're like, there's no org chart or anything like that, so we can't say there are going to be, you know, three full-time equivalents or, you know, whatever. Do you see how we're struggling with trying to...
There can't be an org chart because they only know who's going to supervise somebody at the health agency.
Right.
We are...
Yeah, no, I'm trying to figure out how we can picture this within the scope of...
I wonder if Mr. Nicholson's right. This might be a little premature. I'm not sure. So, you know.
For the three, it just seems like we're giving her a specific name and the two probably, but I'm not... I mean, there's certain situations where I've seen other ones where within each department there's specific paths, right? The sheriff's department is probably not the best one, but right, we have correctional and we have patrol, right? And it seems employees and
an actual career series in the department.
Right.
This puts it pretty broad over multiple departments.
Right. Which I haven't seen before.
Admin assistants are. That's one job specification,
right.
And then they get to be in any department.
We do that with the administrative services officer as well as administrative ASO 1, 2, some departments. Their need only justifies a 1, some it justifies a 2, some will ask for an ASM and we might say no, and some would ask for the department administrator. So depending on what the need is, how advanced, how complex their role is, they will try to make a justification for the appropriate level. We'll try to get them to the one that fits for them. I think this is somewhat analogous here.
So who supervises them in that situation? Who's their supervisor? Another?
It might be a division manager. It could be.
So it's not necessarily
the department head. There's not a singular org structure. But there always is a, and this would include the health agency, there is a structure that includes a reporting relationship for this individual who's currently an ASO reporting to a program manager. That won't change. There is a structure in place there, but it might vary depending on the size and their operation. It's not necessarily always going to be one particular classification that they would report to.
Thank you. So a couple things, Guy can support me on this if he has more information, but we do know that several departments have asked for communication specialists. I'm using the term generically. It's a new field. I mean, it's a field where you can now get a bachelor's degree. It's kind of like, and I'm super dating myself, when I went to college, there was no human resources degree. But now I've got analysts who have a human resources degree. So it's just an evolving area. I think the district attorney, the planning department, health agency, DSS have all said, we need to get communications out and we could use somebody who's either gotten experience or went to school to learn how to do this in a unique way. And then I also wanted to say there is not one person in the county who doesn't know who their supervisor is. It's required. We have a protocol that requires us to identify who signs off on your time card and who does your performance evaluation. Every single person knows who that is. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have other people who weigh in on how effective you are in your job. So Wendy, who did our presentation today, she works for Human Resources. Her supervisor is Jamie, and she knows Jamie is her supervisor, but she is physically located at DSS to provide a special HR service attention to DSS. So when Jamie does her evaluation, she always asks the DSS folks, you know, how's Wendy's performance? And Wendy, on a day-to-day basis, may get an assignment from somebody in DSS, but her supervisor is in HR. And so I just want to assure you, are, you know, there is not one person who doesn't know who their supervisor is.
I don't know if you're questioning that. It was more what you just explained, which is a great explanation.
Okay, I get it. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. So, and
that, we knew that they all had supervisors, except for you maybe, but.
No, I promise you I do.
but it was just that explanation is what I was looking for.
If we don't like, I don't like gray areas. And
understand.
I wanted to make sure that there were none. And also, I was going to ask a question like, what really sparked this need? Because, you know, you explain some of the background, but there's always we need to address this because of a reason, right? And perhaps what you're saying is part of it, that several departments have expressed a need here. And so that's what I needed to hear.
Yep.
I think that's what the commission needed to hear. I saw a hand.
I did. There was a couple of things I wanted to follow up. First, I think your specific question about the spark, I think we identified two people that we felt were working out of class. The admin analyst one, and admin first and foremost came to our attention. And I also wanted to go back. Commissioner Nix expressed some concern about trying to get an understanding of how this might mushroom. And I just want to add a little context. Teresa has spoken to, I want to say, three or four additional departments who have brought this up as a possibility. We knew that there was some communication role. We've already done the desk audit and determined that they weren't. I think Teresa's bringing up that we're not sure what might not come out of the woodwork and ask for the same, but I'm not thinking that at this point there is a need for more than the two positions that we see right now immediately. Of course, I'm not ruling out that there might be a need out there, but I just wanted to go back.
So we won't go from 2 to 10.
Right.
But, you know, for example, the district attorney's office, now that this specification has been created, or will be created, they may go out and ask, you know, admin to adjust their PAL to add this classification so that they could potentially recruit for it now that there is an appropriate classification for them to do so. So there is the potential for it to grow, but not with current incumbents that we are aware of.
So you're thinking they haven't had one and they've managed without one, but now that there's a specification for it, that they'll say, oh, I want to have one of these.
For example, in the district attorney's office right now, our assistant district attorney is taking over the role because they had asked for one. We hadn't had the opportunity to create one, so he's currently operating in the role, but he also has a other full-time job as assistant district attorney. So that's one of the examples I was speaking of.
So the thought is that potentially you will hire someone in at what level, a 3, a 2, 4 in the district attorney's office?
They would be at a level 2 because, or level 1 depending on the need, if the assistant district attorney can, you know, expects to take on the primary role and only needs somebody, you know, as a backup, then it may be a 1, but if they want somebody to do the job, you know, take on more of the responsibility, then it would be at the level 2. It would not be at the level 3 though, because the level 3 is reserved for the administrative office.
So that goes back to the point that our HR director is making, that this is something that is becoming identified as a need to do public service?
Yes, so I guess it's out there in the market now. So when Teresa when Teresa and Mark were doing the research on this, we had no trouble finding them. So it's not like we're charging new ground here. I mean, this is, instead of having, you know, a generic administrative officer position and then trying to target your recruitment to get somebody who's skilled in this, we're creating a class because we will attract people who are going to school for this. I think Guy mentioned that Cal Poly has several positions that function in, you know, public information. So we're trying to, you know, maintain a contemporary classification program, and this is part of it.
And I think I can support this with that kind of explanation, because I think all of us were looking at this as how would this fit into the system, and make sure that we're staying cutting edge, but also staying within the bounds of this is a public agency,
right?
And yep. Wanting to be sure that we're looking at the taxpayer dollars and the efficiency and effectiveness of how we set up our classifications.
Yeah, totally.
I think I'm satisfied now that.
I have one final thing. Substantively, I get what's going on now. I feel more comfortable, and I thank staff for all of your input. I don't ask questions to be difficult, and I think it's not our job to understand, so I appreciate your patience with us and getting us the context that sometimes is necessary, and also to understand where our concerns are coming from, because that can also help frame your thought process along the way with this and other changes. I have a couple of nitpicky, non-substantive things just to point out, and that's, and again, I think I'm using a current draft, I think, on page 007 under the bullet points for level 3. This is under the representative duties. Toward the bottom, the one that talks about monitoring news publications, I would just say, based upon employee and the public's interest in and understanding of.
Yep.
And then check and make sure there's a period after each bullet point. The last one's missing one. And then anytime I see in-depth and department-specific, I'm really missing a hyphen. And I think especially on the department-specific, it's clarifying to have a hyphen. And I'm looking at under knowledge of, this is page 008,
yep.
Knowledge of level 2, the second to the last bullet point. And there may be others that I've missed, but in-depth knowledge of county government or department-specific functions, because without the hyphen, it kind of has a different meaning. And with that, I think I can. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Nicholson, do you have
anything to
add? No, I'm good. All right, what changes have been proposed? Is somebody that's elected?
You want me to add?
You don't have to say it aloud. Have you caught everything that has been?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay. I have
approval. Do we want to bring, we'll bring the changes back? We can approve it, but we can bring the changes back to the next meeting to show what the change as far as information is concerned.
So the removal of the one sentence in public information specialist two distinguishing characteristics that was redundant, and then the adding of the hyphens and the word in, you would like me to bring back?
And also the education,
oh, yes. Yes, I have that as well.
I think those were our specific changes. Most of our issues centered around trying to understand what the.
Yes, I can make those changes.
I'm fine with allowing it to go through with.
Yes, I was going to hold it up.
Okay. Anyway, I move that we accept this as amended for the PIS 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
All right. It's been moved to second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. The motion carries.
Thank you.
And you did a good job.
Thanks.
She's very knowledgeable.
Mr. Bergman, if I may, for just a second, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to attend remotely this morning. As we try and keep the community safe and our employees safe, things like COVID and masks and everything else are such important tools. So, again, I just wanted to say thank you, and thank you for your support of this position. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. All right, next we have commission reports. Commission President. I think the only question I have is where, what status are we on the rule changes?
It's on our list. we have been talking about it. We know we need to get back to you. It's just been a little crazy. So any specific direction to us other than I know you want to get back on?
We have a subcommittee chosen, so
yes.
If you could kind of get that underway, yep. And get them acquainted and start with a real change, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, Commission Council.
Nothing from council. Thank you.
Why?
Because I'm easy.
Outside owners like to talk. Outside council, we'll be hearing from you soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
And Commission Secretary.
Yeah, the only item I wanted to talk to your commission about today is our safety guidelines and protocols and how you're feeling about them. We have kind of been at this for a few months, and we wanted to know how you're feeling about the rooms. Are you comfortable with the safety protocols we put in place? And then how you felt about having somebody on Zoom. I'm sorry to spring that on you, but it did come up at the last minute, and I thought, well, at least it's not a hearing day. And if we have any willingness, openness to having people come in via Zoom for public part of the meeting or for hearings, if you want to reevaluate that, just because this doesn't seem to be going away. So I just wanted to check in with all of you on those items.
You know, I think the protocols work personally because, you know, we've gone through some significant hearings throughout the COVID period and significant, you know, big hearings. And I don't think anyone caught it or spread it because of
us. we have not been a super spreader event yet.
Yeah. But I think your protocols are fine. Anyone want to weigh in, please?
I'm fine with the protocols. I mean, I was late because I was in court on Zoom. So
I told you.
I use Zoom all the time. And I don't even have, I know that some board members have a problem with doing Zoom, this whole thing by Zoom, but I don't have a problem with people attending like I did. Just you have to come and our council has to come, but the rest of
it. That's a nice segue to my points as well. I mean, I am on many boards and meetings and all kinds of stuff all the time, and this is the only one that's requiring in person. And so I have concerns about that, because I think the guidelines have changed even more so as this has evolved. There is a special concern about being indoors for a sustained amount of time. I'm choosing not to take off my mask when I speak because I've gotten really good at enunciating as loudly as possible, so I don't think anyone's having a hard time hearing me, but it's precisely when someone is speaking that you should be having masks on indoors. So I would, at a minimum, like us to think about that particular requirement that we, figure out a way. I can tell you what I know, that the courthouse is handling everything via Zoom. My husband had 170 cases this morning, all via Zoom, and there's obviously due process concerns there just as much as we have here. And so it can be done. I thought this was perfectly fine, and this is how I've attended a regular meeting. So whether we want to make a distinction between meetings, general meetings versus a regular meeting, versus hearings, I can understand a distinction there. But quite frankly, it's really heartbreaking for me that I can't have my kids have their grandparents or their cousins in my home because we're abiding by recommendations from public health. But yet, I go indoors for a meeting like this that I could easily do by this. So I do have some concerns, and I'm happy to have a discussion about that.
Yeah, just as a one of the hats I wear is overseeing safety, so I'm familiar with the safety guidelines that we implemented. The county is following the California Department of Public Health guidelines, and I just want to point out that at work in a non-public meeting space, this would be determined, since we're maintaining 6 feet distance, technically we would be okay here, especially if we would try to maximize outside air and ventilation. But per our guidelines of the county, this would be acceptable in a private environment. We would still encourage people to wear their masks. And actually, especially when you're speaking, right, because that's where you might broadcast more virus. So I just wanted to point out that, and then also point out that one thing we could do, I would just want to bring up, where we kind of get into a sticky place is when we have a public space. And in a public space, it doesn't permit for making any accommodation based on a 6 foot distance. You have to wear a mask in a public space. So I just want to point that out. If that's something that we are feel like we need to follow, then I just want to throw out, maybe there's an opportunity to allow, in my experience, we don't have a lot of public attend, but if we were able to have them attend via Zoom and not and make it not a public space, then that would be that wouldn't be a concern for us. And I think we would be, as we are operating right now, we would be following the county guidelines. So I just wanted to point that out.
So again, just perhaps at minimum, tweaking the mask policy when we're indoors in terms of, if our policy in this commission was to have people take off their masks when they speak. And so that I think we need to reevaluate.
I don't think Commissioner Boltadano, any court reporter in the land, is going to agree to that.
They do, and I think they have. They've done it in the courtroom.
And I think there's a distinction when, especially if you have a Zoom person, and I've been in peer review hearings at UC Davis Medical Center, so I'm going to the hospital, having my temperature taken, and so I was going to say that the way these are being handled, especially by Rosa and staff and the cleaning crew that is here when I get here early, so to do their best to make it work and getting rooms and playing musical locations is fantastic, but I still run into the fact, even at UC Davis with a whole room of doctors, the court reporters can't hear. And I've had three different ones, and they ask people just to remove their masks during that time. So that's something we have to decide and contend with, obviously. And the second thing is, I need to know on the front lines, dealing with litigants like our upcoming hearing, are we allowing Zoom testimony or are we not? However, you know, I think we're doing a great job doing it this way. Just need to know what the rules are going to be going forward. And if we have a court reporter, in my opinion, it's a very different thing than if we don't have a court reporter. And we can project, and maybe the witness has to be 12 or 20 feet away, I don't know, or something. But I've been running, and this is a bunch of doctors, which I found really curious. The Judicial Review Committee is where you commissioners are, is all physicians. And they have wanted to hear and all that. So I think that's something we need to be addressed about the mask, because I've just been taking the position of court reporters with witnesses. Just, and I understand your point, so.
Yeah, but I think Judge Boltadano and I have a lot of experience where a court reporter is in the courtroom reporting everything, and all the attorneys are on Zoom,
right. And
the defendants. And
right. Every
once in a while they say, well, you know, can you repeat that? The judge is sort of responsible for that, but I haven't had any court reporter say, you know, we're not wearing masks because we're on Zoom. So, but they don't have a camera where they're seeing our faces.
Right.
I don't know that I think that in the beginning, when we talked about going to Zoom, it was a security thing for some of us. I don't know, based on my experience, that that's an issue. If it was an issue by the board, I can host it, and then for private session, I can kick everybody else out or put them in a waiting room so they couldn't hear what we're saying. And that's done all the time in court in terms of putting counsel into a waiting room, where I had a case just recently where there's a child that was going to be interviewed, so everybody, all the other attorneys in all the other cases got put in a waiting room. So I really don't think that's a security issue. I think it's actually more convenient to have it by Zoom, because people can stay in their office. You don't have to come from the county office here. You don't have to come from your office. You don't have to come from North County and South County. So there's a huge convenience factor to me. I'd be fine doing this by Zoom, but it's up to the board, the rest of it.
I'm not going to sit in front of the Zoom camera for 8 hours from here.
Oh, I think that, yeah. We can talk about that. I've done it that way, though. I've had a full day here.
I'd just like to say that even today, it was fine that we had the Zoom, but I found for me and having, usually you have the person from the department here, and it was like I kind of forgot he was there, and then, there's that lack of visual cues and so on, and I miss that. And I was telling Bob earlier, I was asked to make a speech at the Rotary, which was they only do their meetings by Zoom. It was horrible, and it was just nerve-wracking trying to do that. And later I saw at a different meeting someone who had been in the Rotary meeting, and she was saying that she hates it too, but that's what they're doing. And I feel like if what we're doing is important enough to do it, I'm willing to come here and do it. I think that it's, and I really prefer to have people here, but if everybody thinks Zoom is wonderful, but I know that Mr. Savage did a good job on Zoom, but I think that it would have been, personally for me, a better experience to be able to personally engage with him.
So, a couple things about that. I agree with you that one of the most enjoyable parts of my job is cross-examining people, and it's a lot different when I can stare at the person in the room right there, and they have to look in my eye when they're lying, versus and be able to get up and show them the document that shows they're lying, than being on Zoom and they're sitting in their attorney's office or their house, and it's like, okay, you're not really intimidating me. And the judge can't see that. But I think that, like, for Mr. Savage, if we were all on Zoom, it's a totally different thing, because we would see him better.
For me, a person to do it is fine on Zoom.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone likes it. Nobody likes this. Just like nobody likes COVID. It's just the situation that we're in. And obviously, my preference would be for everyone to be in person all the time as well. I'm just wondering whether it makes sense when our own Board of Supervisors is not holding public meetings. And we all are. So, those are my thoughts.
Tammy, does the union have a position about the rights of appellants having Zoom meetings versus live? Have they spoken? Is that not an issue?
Well, meetings or hearings?
Don't ask if they have it.
That's a very good point. Everything we discuss about this should have a title. Is this
well,
a meeting
what,
or is this
what
a
I'm
hearing?
Saying. I see that there
are
I'm saying
both. I prefer to be in person for both. And right now, if we were to take a vote on it, there are two and two, so because we're missing
Irwin was pretty clear, he liked being in person.
Yeah.
We have other items to cover, so we can keep this talk going all day. So, anyway, anything further, any points? This will wrap up.
Are you comfortable with me offering
yes.
Zoom for public
meetings?
Meetings, thank
you. If you want to put people on Zoom like you did today, that's fine.
And then hearings we'll worry about later.
Well, I think we should do them in person.
I'm not going to do one without being in person. I want to see body language. I want to feel the room.
Got it.
Okay. All right, that'll take us to item number 9, and I'm going to have a public comment period for that. And then the public wishes to address the Civil Service Commission on closed session matters. Agenda is here being usually recognized by the President's presentation, limited 3 minutes for the meeting. Is there anyone wishing to address the commission on items number 10, 11, and 12 today? Seeing none. done. We'll ask everybody to form the commissioner for their councils to make these rooms.
Yours, we didn't have any. It was just.
We're back on the record. The commission has given direction to our council, and there's nothing reportable.